On this edition of IEEE Spectrum Radio, Yale University professor Charles Perrow asserts that instead of simply responding to natural disasters, we should be reducing our vulnerability to them. From IT Conversations.
With the disastrous FEMA response to Hurricane Katrina still fresh in our minds, Yale sociology professor Charles Perrow says it's time to start learning from these wake-up calls. In his recent book, The Next Catastrophe, Reducing Our Vulnerabilities to Natural, Industrial, and Terrorist Disasters, Perrow says that organizations, from FEMA to the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, are still being staffed by inexperienced political appointees instead of knowledgeable experts. He says we're simply responding to disasters when we should be reducing our vulnerability to them. In fact, Perrow suggests replacing the bloated and inefficient Department of Homeland Security with a Department of Homeland Vulnerability. Spectrum's Francesco Fiorelli spoke with Charles Perrow.
Professor Perrow, will you give us an introduction to the thesis of your book?
The main point of the book is that we have a lot of targets out there that are very dangerous in our society. And if we reduce the size of those targets, we will be much safer. And that's better and cheaper in the long run than trying to defend these targets or recover from the disasters that are certain to happen. We have several sources of disasters: natural disasters, industrial disasters, and terrorist disasters. We're not going to be able to prevent any of these disasters, but we can certainly reduce their consequences.
Interesting. Well, it seems that the central ideas you keep returning to in the book are executive failure, the misuse of organizations, and the primacy of response over preparedness. Can you tell us what prompted you to write this book?
I got involved in disaster research many years ago. In 1984, I published a book called Normal Accidents: Living with High-Risk Technologies. And that got a fair bit of attention because it dealt with systems as a whole in terms of their complexity and their tight coupling. Then, as more and more disasters unfolded, I was told that I had bragging rights. There was Bhopal, Challenger, Exxon Valdez, other disasters following. So I got invited to more and more conferences, and some of them were from the Defense Department. And then I began to get interested in terrorist disasters well before 9/11. And I decided that there was a common theme to all these vulnerabilities in our society, and we should start thinking about reducing the vulnerabilities by reducing the size of the targets.
In reading the book, it becomes very clear that the Defense Department, the Department of Homeland Security, and the 16 intelligence agencies have very little to do with each other in terms of communication and cooperation. What are your thoughts on this?
I think it's to be expected. They have different interests. They have different sources of support in Congress. They have different constituencies, different types of funding, and so everybody wants to protect their turf. And that's to be expected and not entirely wrong, because you want to protect your turf to do the best job that you can. Now, what it takes is some overall leadership and vision to bring these turfs together and make sure that they are talking to one another. But that's very hard to do. No administration has been able to do that completely or fully in a successful way. This administration is probably poorer than other administrations have been, but still, it's to be expected in any administration.
Now, in keeping with the idea of organizations as tools that often get misused, in your history of FEMA, you describe how it became more adept during the Clinton administration, only to fail under the Bush administration. Can you discuss this case a little further?
Yes, that's an important case, and we should back up quite a bit to 1964. People have forgotten about this. In 1964, there was the most massive earthquake that our continent has experienced. It was a 9.6 earthquake in Alaska, and it wiped out the city of Valdez and did an enormous amount of damage. Within a year, just within a year, Alaska was back up and running with a new city of Valdez. Very few people were killed in this. The restoration of homes and the fishing industry was very rapid. It was a magnificent response to a disaster. And this indicates that it is possible to do well in disasters, but it's not that common. If we return to Katrina or even 9/11, we don't find that kind of leadership from the White House. Now back to FEMA. When FEMA was established by President Carter many decades ago, it was a pretty lame organization. It was better than nothing, but it was not very good. When President Clinton came into office, for the first time, FEMA got a head that knew something about disasters, a man named James Witt. And James Witt had the ear of President Clinton and had President Clinton's support. And he went around to all the agencies involved, directly or indirectly, with disasters, and he politicked like crazy to get them on board and to support a revitalized FEMA. So the two points here are is the White House had to be concerned and pay attention and give leeway to the agency head to do what he thought was best. And within a couple of years, we had a magnificent organization up and running. It was, in many ways, the crown jewel of the Clinton administration in terms of agencies, government agencies. When President Bush came in, he did not pay any attention to the disaster, natural disaster aspects of FEMA. Instead, he had it turn its direction towards the terrorist threat, because this was politically very popular at that time to be against terrorism. Worse yet, he filled the agency with people with no experience in disaster management. That is, he filled them with political appointees. The proportion of political appointments in FEMA zoomed, increased greatly once George W. Bush became president. And so FEMA was just not ready to handle Katrina.
Okay, well, it seems that political appointees are going to be with us no matter what. Can you explain a bit the difference between Clinton's appointees and Bush's?
It's quite possible for a president to do that. Clinton made political appointees, but I don't remember the statistics, but there are statistics on this. I think George Bush doubled or even tripled the number of political appointees at high agency levels, and it's quite easy to do. Bush had enough power in Congress. He had complete power 2 years after his election, but even in the first 2 years, he had enough power so that he could push through any political appointees that required Senate confirmation.
Let's move on to another organization you tackle in the book, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Unlike FEMA, it seems that the NRC did not improve during the 90s. Can you comment on that?
Yes, that was a big worry for me, and has been ever since I wrote my book on normal accidents, because I had a whole chapter on the nuclear industry and nuclear power plants. The problem there is that the appointments to the commission, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, have largely been from people who were nuclear plant heads, that is, the heads of utilities that ran nuclear power plants.
When you talk about natural disasters, you say that the rich basically flock to dangerous areas, such as hurricane-prone regions. But your book points out that it's the poor people who are most affected by these disasters.
Yes, of course. Several reasons. One, if there's a warning, the rich people get out. They can fly out easily or get a limousine to take them out. Poor people can't get out. Secondly, the rich people have houses that are more likely to withstand a hurricane, an earthquake, a fire, a flood, so their survival rate is higher. There's only one case I know of with disasters where the wealthy suffered more than the poor, and that was 9/11, because the people in the World Trade Centers, by and large, were upper middle class or upper class. But that's a very unusual case. Mostly it's the poor that suffer rather than the rich. The poor are there in these areas that are going to be devastated by tornadoes, earthquakes, and floods and hurricanes. The poor are there in very large number because they serve the rich. They work for the rich. They provide the infrastructure that Miami needs or that Houston needs. And they live in poor homes and trailer parks and are unable to evacuate.
In the last chapter, you assert that only a major disaster could change things. But given the examples of 9/11 and Katrina, I'm not so sure. Those events seem to be serious wake-up calls, but we just hit the snooze button.
We do learn. Disasters are infrequent. There's short punctuations in a long narrative that we normally are not worried about. And when these punctuations come along, we think about them for a year or so. But if we had hurricanes coming much more repeatedly than they have been, if we had airplanes falling out of the sky every month, we would worry more about making ourselves less vulnerable to hurricanes or to airplane crashes. If we had a series of chemical plant explosions equivalent to Bhopal, we would do something about chemical plants. But we haven't had the series of disastrous events, rapid punctuations, bang, 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 to really alert the populace to these dangers. We could do something about this by publicizing the dangers that we haven't experienced. And to a certain extent, we are a little better there. One recommendation I make, just kind of obliquely in the book, but I've made it more seriously since, is that we dismantle the Department of Homeland Security and create instead a Department of Homeland Vulnerabilities. This would be a department that would use federal resources, the national academies, and other academic resources and the Government Accountability Office, and set up a system whereby we examine the worst vulnerabilities in our society, then publicize these vulnerabilities, and that would bring pressure upon Congress to do something about them.
You seem to have stopped the majority of your research for your book by about mid-2006, if I'm correct. Are you sanguine about anything or worried about anything that has happened since then?
I'm very worried. Things have gotten worse in all the areas that I investigated. Florida is having a building boom along the coast. Florida is using state funds to reduce the rise in homeowner insurance for flood insurance because Florida cannot stand the idea that it will not keep growing from people who want to live in lovely coastal areas, even though they're at risk. The rebuilding of New Orleans is not proceeding according to safety standards. They are resettling areas that were flood damaged and will be flood damaged again. Contra to all predictions of the experts, nothing is being done about that. The governor of California has not been able to do anything about the dangerous levees in the Sacramento Delta. We will have a bowl there that's several thousand times bigger than the bowl of that New Orleans was that can be flooded if there were an earthquake or even severe storms in that area, because much of that land is below sea level and protected by dikes which are crumbling. Our vulnerabilities have just been increasing steadily just in the last year and a half. And I am not at all sanguine. It's going to take an enormous effort of public awareness to bring Congress around to examining these problems.
On a more hopeful note, in the book, you point to several examples of how other countries deal better with disasters. Is that something that is replicable here?
They do it better. It's going to be very hard to do as well as Europe does in all these areas. Europe is ahead of us in so many areas. They're much stronger on chemical safety. They've now passed a bill that has the chemical industry climbing the walls, because it says that instead of the consumer or the local government proving that the chemical is dangerous, the chemical company has to prove that it's safe. Just reverse the process, which makes great sense. And we are nowhere near doing anything like that in our country. We're even behind the European countries in terms of drug safety. Could we do better than we are now? Certainly, but it's going to take an enormous political change and revolution. We're going to need to do something about campaign financing first. All the industries that I look at that terrorize me and terrorize our country, I'm talking about a lot of industries: food industry, telecommunication industry, software industry, as well as the more usual ones. All of these industries survive as well as they do, paying a little attention to safety, because of campaign contributions. Even our best senators and representatives in Congress are beholden to these companies, and we have to change that if we're going to make any serious changes. Campaign financing bills that have been put forth, and very weak ones, have survived, and there are end runs around them. We need something very drastic there, and we need to make the public much more aware of this.
How do you recommend maintaining a positive outlook? Is there hope?
Yes, there is. It is depressing, and I'm depressed. But on the other hand, when I want to press that part of my brain that sends nice signals to me, I think about how it was in the past. Look it, we have EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. It took a long time to get that going. And it's been doing a pretty good job. It's fallen behind the times now with the last administration that's about to end. That weakened EPA, another case where political appointees were made. It's fallen behind, but we have it, and we didn't have it before. We have all kinds of regulations in our society now that in 1900 we did not have. We have protection for workers, we have Social Security, we have Medicare. We have numerous things that have made us safer and a better nation. We can keep doing these. We can keep adding these. We can keep increasing awareness of how to achieve a more equitable and safe society. So if I take a long historical look, then I say we should be optimistic.
Well, Professor Perot, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I enjoyed it, as I hope you can realize.
We've been talking with Charles Perot about his recent book, The Next Catastrophe: Reducing Our Vulnerabilities to Natural, Industrial, and Terrorist Disasters. For Spectrum Radio, I'm Francesco Ferrarelli.
You've been listening to a program from IEEE Spectrum Radio.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Stephen Eng. Our website editor was Niels Makel. The series producer is Niels Makel.
My name is Phil Windley, and I hope you join me next time for another edition of IEEE Spectrum Radio on IT Conversations.